Welcome back to Stack Trace, the show where we talk about Apple news and rumors from a developer's perspective. I am Guy Rambo with a sore throat, and as always, I have my good friend John Sandel. How are you doing, John?
I also have a sore throat. It's the sore throat Stack Trace. But we're going to power through. We have so many cool things to talk about, and of course, since this is a episode before an Apple keynote, we also have to play some poker. Is that right, Rambo?
Of course, there must be poker.
It's so funny that we both got like a sore throat at the same time. Maybe it's late nights up, spelunking, and in my case, coding, you know, preparing for WWDC, things like that.
Yeah, I'm sure my sore throat has nothing to do with going to São Paulo and going to a concert.
And yeah, exactly.
Having water sprayed at me at night, like 16 degrees weather. Nothing to do with that.
No, of course not. That seems completely unrelated.
Of course. So, John, you released a new website, right?
I did. Yes, I finally released my WWDC website, which is a dedicated site for covering all things WWDC. So, like I've mentioned on the show in the past few episodes, I was working on this for quite a while. I've actually kind of been working on this on and off for like 6 months. So it's a pretty big milestone for me to release this website, not only because I'm really excited about covering the conference and I'm going to write a lot of things next week. I've already started writing articles for this website, but it's also a huge thing for me because this is the first site that I am launching using my new tech stack, which is using my Swift static site generator to generate the site. And also, like, the whole web stack that it's running on is kind of new for me. So I'm really excited about launching this, and so far, so good.
Awesome. And one thing I noticed is that the website loads up really quickly. Any tips you can give us? What's the magic there?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, this is a new tech stack that I'm trying out. So I've run many different websites in the past, and I've used everything from like .NET, C#, from Microsoft, and their web servers and things like that. I used Apache and Node and all sorts of things. But now this time I'm like I mentioned, I'm generating the site statically. So the whole site, the reason it's so fast is because everything is served directly from the CDN. So the CDN I'm using is Cloudflare, which I know that you also love, Rambo.
Huge fan,
yeah. Not a sponsor. None of these companies that I'm going to mention now are sponsors, but we're big fans. We really love them, and that's why we use them. So Cloudflare is the CDN, and the architecture is that Cloudflare is set to aggressively cache everything. So what happens is that the first time you visit a page on the site, the first time you download any resource, whether that's an HTML page or an image or the CSS file or something like that, Cloudflare will go and fetch that from my server. And my server is a Linode server, like it's on a Linode cloud. It's running Ubuntu, and there I'm running Apache. And the reason I'm running that web server, shout out to all the people who told me that I'm wrong running Apache and that I should be running something else.
I was the first one, by the way.
Right, exactly. You were the original gangster there. The reason I'm using Apache is because I know it. I've used it many, many times before, and it's easy. It's super easy to set up. And I know it's not the most performant, it's not the most cool and new and whatever. But since I'm not actually running any logic at all on my server, I am just statically serving those resources back to Cloudflare, then the performance of the web server really doesn't matter. Because even though my site so far, so it's about 24 hours now since I launched it, and it's served over 40,000 requests so far, so it's been an amazing response from people, which I'm extremely happy about. But also, do you want to know, Rambo, the peak CPU usage on my Linode server using Apache? You know what the peak CPU usage has been?
Was it like 1%?
1.1, yes.
Wow.
That's the peak usage. So there you see, like, this is the power of this architecture. So I'm aware it doesn't work for like sites that are super dynamic, but mine isn't. It's just articles and other content. There's going to be some podcasts and interviews and things like that, but it's static content. And So the way I'm doing this is that Cloudflare is absorbing all of this content, caching it aggressively, and then serving it to the user. So I reset the cache in Cloudflare every time I publish something new, but it only takes a matter of like an hour for it to reach almost 100% cached requests. So that's the reason, Rambo, you're seeing the website load so fast, because it's actually loading it directly from CDN, and I'm pretty sure Cloudflare has a server in Brazil that you're loading directly from. Right. So it doesn't hit my server. It doesn't rely on the speed of my web service or something like this. It all just serving directly from CDN, which I think is pretty awesome.
Yeah, Cloudflare has CDNs all over the world. And anytime anyone from close to a CDN visits the website for the first time, their CDN is going to fetch the content from your server and cache it on their CDN. So next time someone from that region visits, it's directly from the CDN. Doesn't even hit your web server, which is great.
Exactly. So I mentioned there was like 40,000 requests, and the total transfer for all of those requests in complete total has been about 100 megabytes. Wow. And that's including all the images and everything. So I'm very, very happy about the setup. I'm hoping it's going to keep going so smooth. And my hope is also that I'll be able to migrate Swift by Sundell to this architecture as well and make it as fast. And another thing that's making this site so fast is that it's 100% JavaScript free.
Woo!
There's no JavaScript at all on the site. It's just pure HTML and CSS. And I think I mentioned it before, I really love web development when there's no JavaScript involved. Like, I love writing HTML. I think CSS is amazing for styling things. Like, I feel super productive when I'm running full screen mode here on my Mac. I have a Visual Studio Code on one side. I have Chrome on the other side. I have a plugin in Visual Studio Code. So when I change something, it reloads the web page on localhost. And it's just phenomenal. Like, the development experience, I'm super happy about it.
You know what Visual Studio Code is written in?
I know. Right, so it was made using JavaScript, but it's still JavaScript free.
Yeah, true.
That's true.
I guess it's similar to, I don't know if you've seen that, this is an effing website.
Right.
Website.
Yeah.
That's just like saying how websites should be and how the web has become so bloated and full of crap, basically.
Yeah.
Because you visit sometimes... I visited some website yesterday to read an article, and it was impossible. Like, so many pop-ups on top of the content, and the entire sides of the page were filled with ads and autoplay video and stuff like that. I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. Come on. I mean, I don't want to go off on a whole rant here about the modern web, but yeah, I think we can all agree that it could be improved.
Definitely.
And that's really what I'm trying to do here. Like, I'm trying to I don't want to say I'm trying to show it, because I realize that, you know, my site is my site and not every site is able to do it the way I do it. But I also hope that, you know, I can at least show that if you're running kind of a blog or a website like this, like I am, you can serve it 100% statically. And speaking of ads, I also have ads on the site. Like, I have 4 sponsors that are helping me with this website. But there are no ugly banners or auto-playing videos or pop-ups, you know. Like, I think you can do content, you can do sponsorships, you can do all of these things in an elegant way. You don't need to like ruin your website for it, and that's kind of what I'm trying to do with this thing. So
yeah, exactly.
Really excited about it. So it's going to be a lot of content next week on the site, and yeah, hope that everyone listening to the show also can check it out and hope you enjoy it. The URL, by the way, is www.bysundell.com. So continuing the Bysundell kind of naming.
That's your brand.
Right, exactly. So that's a lot about me. I'm just very excited about this. That's why I want to talk about it so much. But now I want to hear, Rambo, what have you been up to besides going to a concert and being sprayed by water?
And getting a sore throat.
Right.
Yeah, so I've been to São Paulo this weekend for a BTS concert. It was super fun. But I've also been working on Chibi Studio, of course. The website is being worked on at the moment. And I've shown you a wireframe. And what did you think of the wireframe I showed you?
I really loved it. I really love websites that are about products that can kind of, they kind of look like a stack. And as you scroll down, like you get animations and you get like different layouts and you have these blocks and it fills the screen. And that's what it looks like. So I'm excited about it. It looks great.
I love that you asked me, is that thing going to be animated? And I immediately replied, of course it's going to be animated.
Right. And I immediately replied, why did I even ask?
An interesting aspect of this is that this time I actually hired a designer to make the website, because it's one of those things, like I've been doing so much stuff. And even though I could design a decent website and code a decent website, it's one of those things that I feel like I'm better leave to the pros. So right. It's not worth to me to save the cost of hiring people to do the website, given the time I would spend doing it. And it wouldn't be as great as hiring good people.
Yeah, totally. I mean, one thing you learn as you kind of, grow your business, if you will, you know, like as you are working on your product and as you want to take it to new levels and you want to, like you are doing now, you're implementing a brand new version. It's a big thing. It's a big release. You know, as you do these things, you also have to sometimes hire people to just expand the amount of time that someone can spend on this project, because you can keep doing everything yourself. And I know you are not doing everything yourself with this app, because you also have a designer for all the chibis and these kind of things. But you need to, at some point, hire some people to kind of fill those time gaps or gaps that you have in knowledge where someone could do a better job than you. And I think this is a good example of that where you have this big release coming and it's worth it for you to actually get that really, really nicely designed website rather than kind of spending a lot of time building it yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure it's going to be great. The beta has been doing great. We are on the second beta build, fixing some issues and stuff people pointed out. Also working on some new stuff that may or may not be included in the 2.0 release. Some new features we thought about for a while. And yeah, we'll see if those make the cut or if they get postponed to 2.1, which will maybe be our iOS 13 release in September. So we'll see.
Exciting. So how's the beta going in general? Like, what does it look like from a metrics point of view? Do you have good crash rates? Do you have good feedback from people? Like, how's the overall status of the beta?
We currently have about 500 people on the beta. It's not a huge amount, but it's decent. If anyone wants to join, we'll leave the link in the show notes again. And I think we've only had two crashes so far, and they were related both to the same underlying issue, which was fixed. So, I'm actually quite surprised with the low crash rate we're having. Of course, I only have Apple's own crash reporting, and that's opt-in, so only if the user has chosen to share stuff with developers, it shows up. But I guess if we had like a major crasher, we would have heard about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because crash data, it's one of those things where, you know, it's kind of like you have to look at it in aggregate. You have to look at like what are some trends here. And like you mentioned, like if there's a major crash that most people are running into, you're going to see that in the metrics. You're going to see like those same code paths being hit.
And guess what? The crash we had was related to tapping something in the UI really quickly several times.
Right, the classic
that's
one.
That's a classic. Yeah, yeah, classic one. I forgot to do the test.
Yeah, it's so typical. And it's a reason that user interactions are by default disabled during animations, right? But something can still slip through if you're not careful.
Yeah, so, and it was one of those places where I'm pretty sure I can use unowned self here. It's going to be fine.
Right.
But it wasn't.
Yeah, because I was going to make the joke that, of course, your app is crash-free. It's written in Swift, right? But there you see, you know, now that you circumvented the strong type system, Rambo, you see what happens? Crashes.
Yeah. I would say I'm quite defensive in my programming. I don't think it's at a level that it's a problem. I think I'm in a healthy way. I'm defensive. I use guardlet a lot, and I only really do things that I know will crash. If it's something that if it didn't crash, it would cause data corruption or something like that. Right. I mean, even if the app, and this is an example where crashing would kind of be okay, but even if the app can't initialize its database at launch, I actually show an error message on screen, like, sorry, a serious problem has occurred, and some options to the user, because, and this is something that is cool when your app is written in a way that's flexible, because what I do there is instead of instantiating the main app flow view controller, I just instantiate like a second one that's just this error state. So it doesn't depend on anything else. And I think that's a good approach.
Cool. It's kind of like fail-safe mode, right? That an operating system can go into.
Exactly.
Yeah, you definitely make a great point there where sometimes crashing is much, much better than continuing in an unknown state. Because you never know what might happen with that data. Like you might, like you say, override it on disk or something. Like users might lose data. You might be writing corrupt data to the database or sending it to your server. So definitely I agree that sometimes crashing is much better. And sometimes also like too defensive programming can also lead you to those ambiguous unknown states where you are just like so defensive and so not trying to crash that you don't, like, you're starting to hit code paths that you never ever thought would be hit. And at that point, it's just better to give up and say, okay, I'm going to crash here. At least then I get a crash report so I can fix it and users won't lose any data.
Yeah, what I do as well is I pretty much never use like force unwrapping. I always do guardlet and then fatal error if I can't find it. Like, one example, I have a bundle inside the app bundle. That's the inventory bundle that contains all of the assets the app uses. And if you can't find that, I mean, there's nothing to be done. The app is done.
You can just give up.
Yeah, it just, I give up. And in that case, it's a guardlet and a fatal error. It's like, can't find main inventory bundle. This should never happen. Classic.
Right, exactly. Classic. I even have an extension for that. It's called require, and it's actually on GitHub. We can put a link in the show notes.
Nice.
It adds a method to optionals that it's called require, and basically does what you just mentioned. Like, it does that guard fatal error dance. But it's just like giving you a little bit of a nicer syntax at the call site, and also you can be more sure that you're actually doing the fatal error and stuff in a more uniform way. So I do agree that that's a good technique to keep in mind.
Cool.
But we have a lot of things to talk about. You know, this is a big episode. We have, of course, some new Rambo reports. We have our WWC poker. But first, we have to say that Apple, they have surprised us a little bit today with an announcement we didn't expect. And that is that they just released a new iPod Touch.
Wow.
The iPod Touch is still a product in their lineup.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. This new iPod Touch, it has an A10 Fusion chip. So it's basically the same chip as first appeared in the iPhone 7. And one thing that I know you speculated about, Rambo, is that perhaps this is a sign that iOS 13 will only run on A10 or later devices, like devices that have either the A10 chip or later. So can you expand a little bit on this?
Yeah, so given that they still want the iPod Touch to exist, and they've just updated it with an A10 Fusion chip, this could mean that iOS 13, which will be announced next week, is going to be only compatible with A10 chip and later, which means it would cut off devices such as the iPhone 6S and even the iPhone SE. And we talked about the situation with the iPhone SE before, and it's starting to feel to me like Apple is really wanting to ditch that device for good. I don't know your opinion there.
Yeah, I was thinking along the same lines, but then I look at this iPod Touch and it actually has the same screen size, right? So there might be other reasons for ditching the iPhone SE, and especially like given the given the move to A10 and things like that. But thinking about the form factor per se, this would kind of go against that, because here we have another brand new device that has that smaller form factor that we've been talking about, that we kind of wish was going away from a developer's perspective.
Yeah, but the key thing here is that this iPod Touch is not a phone.
Right,
and
that's true.
A big difference. It makes a big difference, especially in the market. It's going to be used by, I think, maybe the main motivator behind this is Apple Arcade and gaming in general.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I've heard a lot of people buy these iPod Touches or even like cheaper iPads and smaller iPads, iPad Minis, for their kids, right? And that's like, instead of getting them a games console, here's an iPod Touch.
Yeah, so the apps don't have to be that optimized for it, but games have to. And I guess for most games, I think it's easier for most games to work on a smaller screen than it is for most apps.
Yeah, because most games, they don't have that much UI per se, right? They might have some buttons here and there, but a lot of games, especially on iOS, are either gesture driven, or they use the accelerometer, or they have these on-screen buttons that appear like wherever you press, or they use some kind of virtual joystick. And yeah, to your point, those are not as much like bound by the screen dimensions as a UI that's using UIKit, because you don't need to worry about UI sizes and text and truncation and things like that as much, because most games, they just tend to, especially if they're written in some kind of game engine, they just render to a buffer and then they just scale that buffer to the screen size. So that's why when you're playing some kind of game, sometimes you will see like they're a little bit more blurry, they're a little bit like not as perfectly sized as quote-unquote normal apps, and that's usually because of that scaling that occurs.
Yeah, and another difference that the A10 chip gives to the new iPod Touch is the ability to use ARKit stuff.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and that's a big one, and I'm also suspecting that Apple will... with Apple Arcade also want some AR stuff in there, right? Because they're really, really excited about AR, and I'd be surprised if there wasn't any games that they featured heavily that are using AR.
Yeah, true. So we'll see. It's just Tuesday as we're recording this, so it could be that tomorrow they release a new iPhone SE. Who knows?
Right, exactly. I mean, looking at this, it's basically like an iPhone SE, but without the phone, right? So it would make sense to just, put a 3G modem in there and ship it, right?
What if we had iPhone without the baggage of phone?
Ah, right. Exactly. I see what you did there. Hello, StackTrace listeners. This is John from the future. I'm so sorry for interrupting the show, but I've traveled back through time to give you a really important message. Did I mention that it comes from the future? And the message is... that this episode is brought to you by Sugu and their brand new Muse case for the latest 11 and 12.9-inch iPad Pros. Sugu are the makers of Amazon's highest-rated iPad case, the Sugu case, and they've just released a new updated version of that really popular case for the latest iPad Pros. This case gives you 360 degrees of protection for your device, and it also gives you other enhancements, like a built-in stand. Perhaps most notably for the Muse case is the fact that it was designed specifically for the new iPad Pro models to enable the Apple Pencil to wirelessly charge without leaving the iPad exposed. The way it works is pretty cool. The Apple Pencil can attach directly to the case and charge wirelessly through it, so your device will be fully protected without making it harder to use. The Muse case has a microfiber lining on the inside and anti-rip synthetic matte leather on the outside, but it also has a super durable shell that allows it to both be super thin while still being incredibly durable. With this case, you will get drop protection for up to 5 feet, that's 1.5 meters, and you will also get a 1-year warranty as well. So, to learn more, open up your podcast player of choice, go to the show notes for this episode, where you'll find the links to the Zugu Muse case on Amazon, and also 9to5 Mac's recent hands-on video, which will show you this case in action. Thanks so much to Zugu for sponsoring this episode of Stack Trace. And now, back to past John and Rambo. All right, moving on. Before our poker, we have, of course, this episode's edition of
The Rambo Report.
And Rambo, you've been on fire lately, I must say. Like, you have had scoop after scoop, and you're back again with another huge scoop about iOS 13. You have screenshots, you have a new reminders app, you have dark mode. Tell us all about this. What's going on?
Cool. So, yeah, we got some screenshots of iOS 13. And we can confirm that it's going to have dark mode, a redesigned reminders app, which looks interesting. We'll talk about it. A new Find My app. And you have to put that space between my and app. Otherwise, it becomes Find My App, which would be like, is that the new name for the App Store?
And do you really think the app is going to be called Find My? Like, is that not just an internal working name?
So here's the thing. We knew about this app and it was called Green Torch. Before.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that was the code name, right?
Yeah, I find it hard to believe they would change it to Find My if it wasn't actually the name. They could just keep using Green Torch.
Right.
So we'll see. But I think it sounds kind of Apple-y to me, this name.
It's just like, yeah, you look at this and you're like, it looks like the string is truncated, right? It looks like there's something missing. Like, did they accidentally truncate the label or something? That's kind of what it looks like. It's also very funny for me because in Sweden, quite common, not super common, but there's a girl's name that is My, which is M-Y. So it's the same. So this sounds like you're trying to find your friend called My. Dedicated app just for that.
Yeah. It's a very tricky app to name because it's going. You can't call it Find My Things because it's also going to be used to find your friends and family.
So, right, exactly.
Yeah, they're not things.
Yeah, it would be like find it slash them slash they slash something. Yeah, it would be find X maybe, you know, but then people would think it would be pronounced find 10.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so tell us more about the other things here. So we've got dark mode. That's a cool thing. So dark mode kind of confirmed, right?
Yeah, so dark mode is confirmed. And more interestingly, dark mode, at least on OLED devices, will be using a true black background.
So hashtag 000.
Exactly, yeah. That's what it looks like, at least. And I can say that I've been told that it looks truly black on an OLED device. So, and I'm not sure if this is going to be different for devices that don't have an OLED display. I suppose it could be, like they could be using a dark gray because that looks better on LCD.
Yeah. Because the cool thing about OLEDs is that once you turn it completely black, the pixels turn off, right?
Yeah.
So it could also save a little bit of battery. I guess that's not like the main reason. But to your point, it looks great. Like apps like Overcast, for example, has a black mode. I also have a black theme on my website, Swift by Sundell. So I really love to see those dark modes that are completely black because it makes text and other content really, really pop when they're... The pixels that surround them are just completely shut off.
Yeah, every app that offers a black mode, I enable it because it usually looks great on OLED.
Yeah, it sure does.
So, little tidbit is that the screenshot UI has changed.
Yeah, I saw that in the report. So it looks like you now have a bit more annotation features and that the screenshot is like contextualized within like where it was taken.
Yeah, and it kind of brings back skeuomorphism in a way with the different tools. They are way more realistic than they are today.
Yeah, they look great, I think. And there's been this debate ever since, like, iOS 7 came out with this new, like, no more skeuomorphism, flat design. But over time, like, you know, there's been this debate, like, maybe we should bring back a little bit of it, but in a more kind of clean way. So maybe not put wood textures all over the place, or, you know, stitches and leather, but, you know, maybe put a little bit more, like, playful iconography and a little bit more 3D, a little bit more shading and things like that, so it's not just completely flat. And that seems to be what they've done here, and it looks great.
Yeah, I can also confirm, and this is a Stacktrace exclusive.
Stacktrace exclusive!
I can also confirm that on macOS 10.15, at least the new media apps, they are going to have colorful sidebar icons again.
Nice, that's awesome.
And it's not just colorful. There's something about them that I really like, which is that they have a gradient within the icon. But the icon, all the icons, they are in a list, and the list itself forms a gradient from top to bottom.
Oh,
with
nice.
The icons.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you mean that the actual, like, grayscale, if you will, that is behind, like, the actual shade of the individual colors is going from brightest at the top to darkest at the bottom, like, over the whole menu?
Exactly, and that's really cool. And they even have a little drop shadow.
Nice. Oof. This is now Apple is being adventurous again. Drop shadows, colors.
Ooh.
Oh my, where are we going to go next?
I mean, the next step is green felt.
Right, bringing back the green felt. Yeah, it's gonna, you know, everything always goes in circles, right? Like fashion goes in circles, you know, people's taste in different things goes in circles. So now maybe we're going to be back again at in the post-skeuomorphic era.
Yeah, 2020 will be the year of linen again.
Right, exactly. No, but I do like this when there's a little bit more detail in the UI, and it's a little bit more like, there's a little bit more depth to it, and there's a little bit more playfulness going on than just this super flat, serious look.
Now, John, the article has been updated after it's originally been published with the iPad screenshot markup UI. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I'm actually looking at it right now here in your article on 9to5 Mac, where it appears like you can... could you move this thing around, or what is this UI that we're looking at here?
Yeah, so basically this pill-shaped thing, it's actually called a tongue in some places. That basically means this thing can be dragged around. So the little platter, it's at the bottom by default, but you can drag it around the screen to reposition it to a place that's more comfortable for you on iPad, that is. So it makes sense, like you have this 13-inch screen on the biggest iPad Pro, and you might be left-handed or right-handed, and you want it maybe at the top or at the bottom. It makes sense for you to be able to drag it around.
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned earlier that I've been doing web development, I've been running Visual Studio Code and my web browser in full screen, and I've also sometimes been watching like videos in picture-in-picture, or I've been bringing something else in. And being able to move these things around, depending on what you're working with right now on a big screen, is super valuable. So I would also love to be able to do these kind of things, not only for picture-in-picture, but for all sorts of tools and panels that you have. For example, when I'm using Pixelmator on the Mac, it has a UI which is structured much around panels. I would love to be able to do something like that with those kind of applications, like, you know, move the tools to wherever they are less invading at that point.
Yes, and with the Find My app, which we mentioned, you also have a little card, a little window, and by default, it's at the bottom left of the screen, and it also has this little pill-shaped thing at the top, and you can also drag it around. So by default, it's at the bottom left, but you can drag it anywhere you want, and it shows a list of your friends in one tab and a list of your devices in another tab. So that little sheet window can be dragged around. It's similar to what we have in Maps currently. You have this on iPad especially. And imagine that, but it can be dragged around.
Cool. And do you think this is kind of a UI paradigm that they're going to adopt in more or less every application on the iPad? And do you think that this is going to be something where, you know, if you adopt this view controller on iOS in general, it will kind of automatically render this UI on the iPad?
As far as I know, it's a presentation style for a view controller. So kind of like you can choose to use a form sheet. You can choose to do this floating card presentation thing. And it's a different API from what you'll use to spawn a separate window, quote-unquote window, of your app.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds really cool. And it's also smart that Apple is reusing that presentation style, if that's what's going to end up happening, because it's a very nice API that you can take that same view controller, and if you've written it in a way where it can be adaptive to the context being presented in, you can display it as like a sheet, you can display it as an alert, and Apple's own UI alert controller is a great example of this, where if you present it as an alert, it will be a like a system alert, and if you present it as a sheet, it will have a little sheet with buttons where you can select what you want to do. So I think that having that API be expanded to different shapes and forms is could be really great.
Yeah, and since they have this pill at the top, they can just use the Safe Area API to like inject this little extra space at the top. So basically, it will tell your view controller your safe area has this extra, 12 pixels for this little pill-shaped thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be like these indicators. Like right now we have the home indicator at the bottom, and there was so many apps when that came out that was drawing things accidentally over it, and now we're going to have them in so many places, and it's going to be fun for all developers to deal with all those content inset bugs and safe area inset bugs. Those are always the most fun to deal with. So Rambo, whenever it is that you are presenting some of these findings and you have some screenshots to back it up, or you found something like you found some product image or something else, or some glyph hidden in some firmware or something like this, people are always accusing you of it being fake, you know? That, oh, it's obviously fake. And this time, I saw a lot of people commenting on that, oh, but there's no new wallpaper on the screenshot, so there's no new icons on the home screen. So could you take us a little bit like behind the scenes, like, you know, why is it that these things look the way they do, and how can we be sure that they are for real?
Well, first of all, we need to talk about expectations and reality. So expectations are that there's this brand new home screen on iPhone with all new icons for all the apps, and that's not true. That's simply not true. I'm sorry, but it's not true.
Right.
I know people would love that. I don't know why, because I really don't see why iPhone needs a big home screen redesign. I feel like iPad does, and it is apparently getting it, but I don't have screenshots of that, and I don't put that in my article. And again, the same disclaimer as always, just because there's not been a leak about something does not mean it's not happening.
Right.
So also, the wallpaper. So first of all, when you update your device to a new version, it keeps your current wallpaper. So if you're like me and you like to use the default wallpaper for whatever iOS version you're using, you will update to iOS 13 and you'll still have your iOS 12 wallpaper. These are not marketing images from Apple. They would be very different if they were marketing images.
They would not have the 9-to-5 watermark on them if they was a marketing image.
No, they would if they had leaked, iPhone XS images. But they would like have sample content in the Reminders app. It's empty in the screenshot. That's because these are not marketing images from Apple. There's not even anything playing in music. Do you think Apple would use that as a marketing image?
Right.
So these are not marketing images. These are from someone who's got their iPhone running iOS 13, their personal device running iOS 13. So you need to keep that in mind. Also, people have this belief that just because you work at Apple, you have access to everything. And that's not how it works. Otherwise, way more stuff would leak.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you are not a Springboard engineer directly involved with the redesigned home screen for iPad, you don't have it. Simple as that. They have ways to hide those features. In fact, I can exclusively tell you that the person that took the dark mode pictures did not have access to dark mode. They had to do some stuff to their phone to be able to see the dark mode. So even that is hidden if you're not one of the engineers working on dark mode. Just because you work at Apple doesn't mean you have access to every new feature before it's announced.
Yeah. And to your point, that's why, relatively speaking, few things do leak, right? Like, sure, this year, this season, you've been really on fire and you've had a lot of scoops. But at the end of the day, I'm sure we're going to see like hundreds of things at WWDC that we haven't seen and different things. And Apple are really kind of famous for that, you know, really, really good kind of siloing when it comes to who's working on what, and the people who are working on something new does not necessarily know about everything else that's new. And, you know, there are all these kind of famous stories about the people working on the first iPad. They only had this huge box and they couldn't even see the device. And I'm sure that's true for every iPhone, for example. I'm sure they don't get the actual, you know, here's the new iPhone 10, exactly what it's going to look like. Because if you would give like 1,000 employees that, someone would accidentally leave it in a bar, right? which did happen, or leak it or something like that. So absolutely, it's I'm sure that people only have access really to, it's on a need to know basis. They only have access to what they really need to know.
Yeah, and about the home screen redesign again, for some reason, some people think that a redesigned home screen means new icons for every app. That's not what it is.
Right.
Redesigned home screen would mean a new layout. And there's never been any rumor for iOS 13 about a redesigned home screen for iPhone. That's right. For the iPad. As far as I know, the home screen on iPhone will be pretty much the same we have today with the new dark mode, of course. You can see in the post, the leftmost image, people were saying, oh, that's iOS 12. No, it's not. It has a dark dock. It's using dark mode. But that's the home screen. There's nothing new there.
Right.
And people said that it's missing the Find My app, but that app is not in the default home screen that you get in the first page. It's in the second page. So that's why it's not in there.
Yeah, and you can rearrange the icons, right? Like if this comes from just some random person's device, then they could have just put it in a folder somewhere or something, right? It's not a marketing image. It's not showing like the stock UI that you get directly, like the stock order that you get when you install iOS 13 on a blank new device. It's probably someone who's using this every day and they've moved things around and customized it.
Yes, and another point, the pictures have been modified. Yes, they have. The status bar has been changed to the default 9:41 a.m. time and with the full bars and full battery. And some other information in the screenshots has been changed to protect the identity of the source.
Right.
And that's why the images have been modified.
Right. And I also think that I'm actually happy that we are not getting these huge sweeping let's redesign everything changes anymore. It seems definitely that Apple have slowed down a bit when it comes to these things, and they are more focusing each release on a certain specific key areas. Like iOS 12 was explicitly stated, like this is a release that we're really focusing on performance, especially for older devices. We're not changing a lot here. And if this device is focusing a lot on the iPad, you know, I mean, we're already seeing these cards, there might be a new home screen, etc., then I'm also happy that they're focusing on that. Because like any company, if you're focusing on too many things, you end up spreading yourself too thin. And no one wants another iOS 7 release, right? Where both for Apple and for developers and for customers, like everything is just like thrown away and let's start again. And here's a completely new redesigned, rethought thing. I mean, it looks cool in a video, but anyone who was an iOS developer back in the iOS 6 to 7 transition don't have very fond memories of those days because we had to work a lot on moving our apps to this new design language. And at the same time, all the APIs were changing. It was a bit of a nightmare, to be honest. So I'm kind of also happy that we're getting these more like a little bit more slow, a little bit more focused iterative releases that are focusing on a key aspects rather than just changing everything.
I remember one recurring Stack Overflow question back in the iOS 7 days was, how the hell do I get my content from behind the title bar?
Right, exactly, yeah. Because all those APIs were changing, like the things we were talking about earlier, like content insets and these things that still apps are battling with, like still many, many years later. And it's not because the developers are bad, it's because it's sometimes really tricky to get right. And we had to do all of that stuff for the first time whilst changing the entire design of the apps. It was pretty crazy.
And some apps still had to support iOS 6 because
Did
run them in a compatibility mode. So yeah, it's really crazy. I really don't get this obsession of some people with everything has to change completely every year. We talked about this before and I still don't get it. Like, why that? Why does the home screen of the iPhone have to change completely every year? I really don't understand that. I much prefer evolutionary changes. And this year, we are going to be having a lot of work to do as developers because there's going to be a lot of new API, especially on iPad and new AR stuff. And lots of things that we need to worry about. So, yeah, I'm glad that they're not nuking everything and starting over.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. I think it's what we really actually want. Like, again, people can get excited about these videos where there's Johnny Ive and he's explaining how he redesigned everything from scratch. And that's cool to watch and it makes for a good show. It makes us excited. But then, you know, again, in day-to-day lives, both as users of these devices and as developers, it's better if things are moving a little bit slower, but still making good progress, but you know, in a more organized fashion. Like you said, let's not nuke everything and start over. Speaking about nuking and starting over, what about Marzipan?
Ooh, yeah. So Marzipan, this is a big surprise, John. I don't think anyone was expecting this.
Yeah, it's a big drum. Cue the drum roll.
Marzipan is not going to be called Marzipan.
Really? You mean that there won't be a big slide in WWDC introducing Marzipan?
Yeah, we won't have that.
Oh, that's a big letdown.
Yeah. So as someone I know has been talking about for quite a while, there's going to be a checkbox in Xcode.
The infamous checkbox.
The infamous checkbox. You'll be able to check a checkbox for iPhone, a checkbox for iPad, and a checkbox for Mac. And
beautiful.
The checkbox says Mac.
There
just
you go.
Mac.
It at least has the same two letters, right? So whoever thought it was going to be Marzipan was at least like 20% right. Right, yeah. I think this is what we've been expecting for a while now, at least you and me and a lot of other people, that it would be something like that. And it makes sense, right? Like it makes it look like so simple. You just like you create your app, check a few checkboxes, run it on the Mac, because that's kind of how we want it to be, at least in the long run. We in 10 years from now, we shouldn't be talking about, oh, are you using Marzipan, right? Like 10 years from now, it should just be, of course, my app runs on every Apple device because they've normalized all the APIs and everything is great. And, you know, we can just ship one app and it works on every platform. That's kind of where we want to go, right?
Yeah, definitely. And there's also the demo aspect. I really feel like they want to go in platforms of the union and show, hey, here's this iOS app. Maybe they'll even use like a real iOS app from iOS. Like here is Calculator from iOS. We just check this box and press build and run and it runs and the crowd goes wild.
Yeah, that's going to be a big applause. I mean, I'm going to applaud here from my couch if that happens. That's going to be a great demo and I'm sure that's what they're going for. It's going to be a good show.
I actually miss when we had this demo content with the developer DVD. You can
oh,
see
right.
The mode.
Yeah.
And one of the sample apps that came with this content was TextEdit, the real TextEdit app from macOS. It used to be open source.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
So you would get the source code for TextEdit on like a DVD and you can play around with it?
Yeah, it came with the developer DVD and it had examples that came with it. And one of those was TextEdit and it was the real TextEdit.
Cool, but I guess that makes sense because TextEdit is pretty much a thin wrapper on top of NSTextView anyway, right?
Yeah.
All right, so great report as has been for many months now. Really good work and exciting to see what's going to happen even after WWDC because usually this is your prime time is after WWDC, right, Rambo? Like when you actually get all the betas or you get all the new, you know, iOS 13, everything, that's when you can really find a lot of information. So seeing this many reports before WWDC, you know, I'm excited for this show for months to come now.
Yeah, so my Monday next week, I plan on spending, start with in the morning, I'll probably meet some people before the keynote, but I am probably going to be watching the keynote by myself and spending the rest of the day just spelunking the new stuff.
That's a true spelunker's lifestyle, you know, locked into your hotel room alone, you know, the blinds are down, the lights are off, you just you and your terminal spelunking.
Yeah, so that's my plan for Monday because I do that for every Apple keynote and this one is gonna be a big one. So yeah, keep an eye on my Twitter for updates.
Absolutely. All right, so what do you say? I think it's high time that we start our poker game. Are you excited?
Yes.
Are you ready?
I am more than ready.
Excellent. So to remind everyone, the rules of our poker game is as follows. So both me and Rambo, we're going to do 5 picks each. So we have a list here in a document that we are looking at right now where we can pick from different items that we have agreed upon. And each time we pick an item, we can bet on it. So we can assign from -5 to +5 points on each item that we bet on. So for example, if I'm really confident that this particular item will be shown, I might give it a 5. If that item is then shown, and we're talking now shown on screen, on stage, at WWDC, at the keynote. So only the morning keynote. This thing needs to be shown. And if I then to go back to the example where I gave it 5 points, if it that ends up being true, then I get those 5 points. And if not, I lose those 5 points. So it's a bit of a gambling, and the same is also true for minus. Minus is basically betting on that something won't be shown. So we're going to go back and forth, we're going to do some betting, and let's see who's going to win. We're also going to put a scorecard in the show notes, so if you want to play along with us at home, you can do that. And as always, we love to see you send us your bets on Twitter and things like that. We have also excluded some obvious items that Rambo already knows about, so even though I think Rambo is a little bit of at an advantage compared to me here, but still, we have made it as fair as possible. So all that remains before we start, Rambo, is to agree on the price. So what should we do for a price this time?
I think we can do something original and the price could be dinner.
Oh, right. We've never done that before. But dinner is such a great prize because that's something to look forward to the next time we meet, right? You're going to have this
exactly.
Nice dinner. And also for the record, the dinner you did get in Italy was quite nice, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah. Great. So since you were the past winner, I think it's makes a lot of sense that you will start. I think that's how it works, right? So
yeah.
Rambo, tell me, what's your first pick and what's your bet?
All right. So my first bet is that there will be a new undo gesture that can be done on iPad using at least on the keyboard. But it's possible that it will be in other places as well, but I'm betting that there will be a new undo gesture you can do on the keyboard on iPad.
Cool.
And we kind of know that this is happening, but they may not talk about it on the keynote.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's a bit of a gamble here, because even if it's shown, even if it's released, even if it's shown in the sessions during the week, it needs to be shown or at least spoken about. It at least needs to appear in the keynote in the morning.
Yeah, so there are always many things that people discover later when they are running the betas. So, yeah. So I'm going to actually give this a 3.
All right, sounds good. I'm going to give it a 2, just to start off not completely even. Again, I'm pretty sure something like this is in the cards. You see what I did there in the cards? whether or not it's going to be shown at the keynote, I'm a little bit more doubtful, mostly because there seems to be so many things going on in this keynote. So it might be a kind of a speedy one. So I'm going to give it a 2.
Cool. So what's your first pick?
So I'm going to go with a big price straight away, and that's because I'm really excited about it. So I'm going to bet that the Mac Pro will be shown at the keynote. The new Mac Pro that they've been teasing ever since that Mac roundtable, you know, is it now 1-2 years ago, something like that?
2 years.
Yeah. And I think it's about time that we see this thing. And it also mirrors what they did with the iMac Pro a while back, where they did show it at WWDC. They said it was going to come out later this year, and they gave some tech specs and they showed a little bit of a preview. So that's what I'm betting, that this will happen, but with a Mac Pro. And I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to give this one a 4, Rambo, because, again, it's one of my aspirational picks. I want it to happen. So I'm sending a signal to the universe that please, please make this happen by me giving it this points.
Cool.
So what do you think about that? What's your bet?
I'm going to give it a 4 as well.
All right. And do you have any motivation there, or are you just like playing it safe here, matching my bet?
I'm kind of playing it safe, but I feel like it's very likely that it'll be announced. But it's very likely, but I'm not that sure. So let's go with a 4.
All right, that makes sense. So what's your next pick for round number 2?
So let's keep this in the hardware section for now. I'll bet that there will be a new professional Apple display announced, mentioned, or released.
Ooh, this is going to be fun. All right. Now we're getting into a little bit more tricky territory. But I mean, they also mentioned that Pro Display during the roundtable a few years back. So
yeah.
Maybe not. So what do you think?
I feel like this display, I don't think they would announce the Mac Pro without announcing the display. And because of that, I'll give it the same 4.
I do like your reasoning, but at the same time, it could be something that they would save just to be able to have something else to show later in the year or something like that. Because the display is not only for the Mac Pro, even though I'm sure, you know, they go great together, since the Mac Pro doesn't come with a display. But there are so many other Macs you could use it with, so I'm going to be a little bit more cautious and say 3 here.
Fun.
You know, got to keep the game alive, Rambo. You got to do it for the game. That's how it works, right? All right, I'm going to move from hardware now. Let's go into the land of software again, where we are the most comfortable. And I want to talk about multi-window support on iPad. So you mentioned during the Rambo report that there are these little pills, as you call them, where, you know, there are detachable little panels, so you can move them around. I'm not necessarily talking about that. I'm talking about now that apps will be able to have multiple windows, and that you'll be able to run, for example, Google Docs with 2 instances. You can move them around. You can perhaps like resize them in different ways that you've been before. Some kind of new feature that we can call it Windows. Like, this is multiple windows. It doesn't have to be Windows like on the Mac, but something that resembles that metaphor more than the current, it's one app, it's just displayed in one instance. If you have it in Slideover, it's always going to appear in Slideover. A more flexible windowing setup for iPad. That's my bet.
Yeah, so basically you can have, let's say, multiple documents open at the same time.
Exactly, right. And I'm going to give that one, you know, I'm going to go really out here, Rambo, and I'm going to give this one a 5.
Ooh.
Again, wishful thinking is my primary weapon here.
Well, I'm sorry, but I have to give that a 5 as well.
Aw, you're playing it so safe.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that's happening.
Right. And then that actually just makes me feel better about my bet. So, you know, I'm not that disappointed in your tactics here. It makes me feel good. All right, so round 2 is over. Time to move on to round number 3. So what's your third pick?
So I'm going to bet, now moving to the developer space, I'm going to bet that there will be some sort of new background tasks API for iOS apps. Whether that's like being able to run headless extensions, which we've been talking about for a long time, or just like an improved way for apps to perform background tasks. And of course, that has to be mentioned during the keynote. So they have to say something like, oh, and we're improving the background task API, or we're introducing a new background task API. Do like the API cloud slide count?
Yeah, of course. If it's on the slides, even if it's like in 10-point text on that cloud, if we can see it, like if we can make a screenshot of the video and zoom in and see it, it counts.
Okay, so I'll give it a 3.
I do really hope that this is coming, and I think there's a fair chance that it is. And I think it would be super cool to be able to run apps more like services. We've talked about it before a lot, that this is really one of our big dreams for iOS, that apps will be more flexible as to what they can do in the background. But I don't really see it fitting into the keynote. It doesn't seem like something they could mention as a user feature. It could appear in that cloud, true, but not so sure about the keynote. So I'm going to go ahead with a 1 here. Just to, like, I do believe it's happening, so I don't want to give it minus, but I don't think necessarily it's going to appear in the keynote itself.
I really hope the API cloud slide saves me.
Right. That's the best slide, right? That's the slide where you go like, oh, they're doing that. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's the API slide is always my favorite. All right. So for my next pick, my third pick, I'm going to go with something that also might be tricky to fit into the keynote, but something that I really wish would happen. And I think it can be a user-facing story as well. And that is that we get quote-unquote real Safari on the iPad. So what do I mean by that? I mean that Safari on the iPad will no longer be primarily like the iOS version where you get like iOS sites where you visit them. And things that tie in here are some of the things you've been talking about in the past where you will get some kind of download manager. You might get that Apple, they are identifying websites where they can serve the desktop version automatically. Like you will get more like a desktop-like browsing experience on the iPad. And I'm not talking about the under-the-hood things here because I'm sure they're not going to say, oh, it's using this fork of WebKit and blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm not sure that that's going to appear in the keynote, but it's going to be pitched to customers as, you know, Safari on the iPad is kind of growing up or it's getting new features, it's becoming more powerful, almost like the Mac. Here's a download manager. Here's this thing. Like some kind of mention of Safari being substantially more powerful.
I think that's a safe bet.
And I'm giving that 1 of 5.
Cool. I'm actually going to give it a 4. Just because I'm not sure if that makes the cut for the keynote.
Yeah, that's the big gamble here because we know a lot of information or we've heard rumblings of a lot of information and a lot of things seems to be kind of imminent. But the keynote, it looks packed, right? Yeah. So that's the big gamble here. But I do still believe that Safari is so important, you know, like browsing the web is so essential. I'd be surprised if they didn't mention it during the keynote.
Cool.
All right, so moving on to pick number 4. We have 2 rounds left, so gotta make them count now, Rambo. Which one is your penultimate pick?
I'm gonna bet that we are going to get mouse pointer support on iOS.
Oh, yeah. Now load up the aspirational points. The wishful thinking begins.
Yeah, this is a really tricky one because as far as we know, this is going to be an accessibility feature that's kind of hidden. So they implemented it, but in kind of a hidden way. And this could be in one of the word cloud slides. But it's tricky. I'm going to give it a 2.
Yeah, the fact that it doesn't seem like Apple wants to really advertise, you know, iOS as being a mouse-driven operating system. It just seems to be a little bit confusing since the message this year is also bringing a lot of apps to the Mac from iOS and things like that. So I do also think that it could be an accessibility feature. Our friend Federico Vitici has been reporting on this. But I'm actually going to give this a -2 just because I really don't see this going into the keynote, even though, again, the API word cloud slide could end up saving you here and hurting me here. But I'm still going to give it a -2, even though I really hope that this is going to actually be reality.
Yeah, but as always, we're not betting on reality. We're betting on whether it appears in the keynote. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, so what's your next pick?
My next pick is going to be, again, something that you've reported on, but we haven't heard a ton about, but just a little whispers here and there. And it's that the iPad will be able to take over a window or maybe even the full screen from the Mac and show it. So some form of extended desktop feature, either like a kind of Luna display like, or some of these apps that, you know, enable you to render the entire Mac UI onto the iPad. But it could also just be a single window or something, but some way to natively within the OS use the iPad as a kind of second monitor. And I'm going to give that one a 4.
All right. I'm actually going to give it a 5.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I feel like there's no way they're not demoing this with
Craig absolutely.
Federighi.
If it's coming, it's definitely going to be. I can definitely see that demo happening. I'm just not sure if it's going to be ready this year, but yeah, if it is, then it's definitely going to be shown off.
Awesome.
All right, so this has gone by quickly. You know, when you're having fun, time flies. So we are now at the ultimate round. So, Rambo, I thought we could do something fun here for the ultimate round. So Ooh. Let me know what you think about this. A little twist here, a little twist in the game. So rather than just, we have quite a lot of items here because there seems to be a lot of things going on. So could you give us like a little bit of a countdown? You're going to give us your final pick, but first give us like two runners up and then go for your final pick. Can you do that?
All right, cool. So let me choose the runners up here.
And you don't need to bet on the runners up. You can just mention them as like things you're considering that you think are highly likely, but you don't really want to bet on it as a bet.
Cool. So highly likely the new volume HUD. So that they changed the current one that's this huge square in the middle of the screen to something more smaller that doesn't block what you're doing. That's a runner up. And also the mail app getting auto labeling of emails in different categories and just a refreshed UI and organization in general. Those are the runner-ups.
Yeah, those are good runner-ups. And definitely the second one there, I think, is very, very likely.
Yeah.
And what's your final pick then?
So the actual pick will be, and this is also a tricky one, there's going to be a significant evolution of ARKit.
Ooh.
I'm not sure if they are going to call it ARKit 3. It's possible that they will, but I'm not betting on the name. What I'm betting is that there must be a significant evolution of ARKit, like a brand new feature, like it's able to detect some other type of thing it's not able to detect at the moment. Something in that sense. It can't be just like, oh, and we're improving ARKit. It has to be like a specific new thing about ARKit.
Yeah. Can you give us an example? Because we've had these in the past, you know, these like significant or great improvement or something. Could you give a concrete example of what would count as a significant improvement?
Yeah, like it's now able to detect hand movement
right.
and detect human poses, things like that.
Got it. All right. So if they say something like ARKit is making a huge leap forward this year or something like that, and they mention some really big features, that's when you win.
Yeah. So it has to be at least one new feature in ARKit itself.
Got it. And what's your bet?
3.
I'm going to take a page out of your playbook here, and I'm actually going to bet 3 as well. I think it's definitely likely. But then again, it seems like a packed keynote. It could just be that they do some kind of AR demo. They always need to do an AR demo, right, at WWDC?
Of course.
So that could be a great place to mention it as well. All right, so those are all of your 5 bets. But now it's time for mine. And I'm going to do my runners up first. My first runner up is that, related to yours, that Xcode 11 will contain some form of a specific software or view or even a companion app that lets people create AR content. So some form of AR studio. I can definitely see that happening, like kind of like how they have the SceneKit studio. Or SceneKit editor, but specifically for AR, that runner up there. And then the second runner up is that there will be some kind of developer facing API for tabs on the iPad. So tying into my previous bet with multiple windows and documents, that if you, for example, enable support for multiple UI windows in your app, similar to how if you have multiple NS windows on the Mac, you can bring those into a tabbed navigation UI automatically by the system. So those are my two runner-ups.
Awesome.
But now, for my final pick. And Rambo, you know I have to take this one. Like, I know it's not super likely, but I have to. Because this is my biggest dream right now. And that is, I want Xcode for iPad. Or some kind of Playgrounds Pro. Or some kind of professional Swift developer tool for iPad. Some form of IDE or advanced editor or something that offers more functionality than Swift Playgrounds does right now. Even though I do love Swift Playgrounds, I just reviewed the latest version of it on Swift by Sundell and I really, really like it. But I want that powerful, you know, let me build apps, real apps, let me get rid of all my scripts and hacks that I've made in order to be able to use Playgrounds like a professional development environment. And I just want something that is natively supported. So Xcode for iPad or something like that, a pro-level Swift editor for iPad is my final pick. And I'm going to give that one a 3. Because, again, it's wishful thinking. I'm sure they're working on it, but I don't know, you know, if it's for this year. But I would just love to see it. So a 3 for Xcode for iPad for me.
Now I'm going to do something that I think we've never done, and I'm not even sure if it's legal. But I'll give this a 0.
Oh, you're checking, right? It's definitely allowed in poker, right? You're just knocking on the table and you're saying check, right?
Okay, check.
All right, fine. You're playing it that way. You have a very very specific tactic this year, I must say. But you know, anything's allowed within the rule book, so I'm gonna allow it.
All right.
All right, great. That's been our WWDC 2019 poker session. I hope you liked it. And again, there's going to be a scorecard in the show notes so you can download a PDF where you can fill it out and make sure to tweet us your predictions because it's so much fun to see and discuss with you what you think and what's going to happen. And of course, we'll see next Monday who is the winner of the next dinner, which I'm not sure is going to be winner-winner chicken dinner, but some kind of dinner.
Awesome.
All right, so that's it for this episode. Both me and Rambo are, of course, eagerly awaiting WWDC. Rambo, you're going to be in San Jose this year. You're going to be hanging out there if people want to hang out with you and find you and talk to you. But you can also find both of us on Twitter. I am at John Sundell and Mr. Rambo is at _inside. Make sure to stay tuned to both 9to5mac.com for all of Rambo's writing about WWDC and all the new things that will be announced. And check out wwdcbysundell.com for my writing about WWDC. But that's it for this episode. We'll talk to you on Twitter and we'll talk to you next week when we're going to actually discuss all of the things that ended up being released. So until then, say goodbye, Mr. Rambo.
Goodbye.